In the end, it didn't even take an hour. They strolled through the jungle, following a wide path the monsters had carved out over the years, and nothing bothered them except the ever-present insects. All along the way, distressing, large, and dangerous-looking creatures watched ominously from the jungle shadows, but kept their distance. Guide led the way, what remained of his human body dangling between his eight huge spider legs as they stabbed sure-footedly through the thick undergrowth. Jessamine kept as much distance between herself and Guide as she could without seeming actually rude. She'd never liked spiders. Lewis strolled along beside the creature, chatting easily, but then, that was Lewis for you. Brett and Rose followed after, both of them constantly watching the surrounding jungle suspiciously. Saturday wandered happily along in the rear, snapping insects out of the air. Good sex always made her hungry. When they finally reached the site of the downed standing, it was actually rather disappointing. There wasn't much to see. It was just another clearing, surrounded by the huge looming trees, overgrown with a thick purple grass that rose here and there in rounded hillocks. No sign that anything had ever crashed there, let alone something the size of a castle. But there was something about the clearing. The temperature dropped noticeably as they stepped out into the open space, and Lewis could feel all the hairs on his arm standing up. There was a tension in the air, like the calm before a storm. Nothing else moved in the clearing. No bird flew over it, and not one of the insects followed the party out of the jungle. Guy turned around to regard them, doing his best to speak clearly, despite the mandibles distorting his mouth.
This is where the Death Stalker standing crashed to earth. The terrible force of the impact drove most of the castle underground, though its energy shields absorbed most of the damage. The interior should be mostly intact. What little of the castle remains above ground has been overgrown, of course. The jungle is always quick to recover its territory.
Lewis and the others looked back and forth across the clearing.
I still can't see anything.
Guide slammed one of his legs against an overgrown hillock that looked no different from any of the others. His clawed foot tore away a long curve of earth, revealing a stone wall. Guide swung his body around to fix Lewis with his six eyes.
Train your disruptor on this, Deathstalker. Lewis set it.
Lewis ran an energy beam across the hillock, searing away the vegetation, and uncovered a wide stretch of stone wall, some 40 feet long and 10 deep. He put his gun away, and they all crowded forwards. Steam rose slowly from the ancient, pockmarked stone, along with a not unpleasant scent of burnt grass. The wall was made up of huge, cyclopean blocks, and clearly only part of a much larger structure.
If that's just one block, how big is the wall? How big is the damn castle? Hell, they actually had a flying stone castle. I always thought they made that up.
Makes you wonder what other legends about the old standing might also be true. There are stories.
Yes, there are.
Lewis remembered the stories told of the old Deathstalker castle, told only in the privacy of his own clan standing. Some of those stories had been disturbing. He turned to Guide, careful to keep his voice calm and steady.
Can you show us a way in?
Of course, Sir Deathstalker.
Guide led the way around the hillock and thrust aside thick swatches of vegetation with his long legs to reveal a wide and jagged crack in the ground. Lewis bent over and peered into it, but there was only an impenetrable darkness. Jessamine pressed in close beside him, clutching at his arm.
There could be anything in there, including all kinds of traps and ambushes.
The thought had occurred to me, but I didn't come all this way to Backdown now, and I won't be kept out of my ancestral home by my own hesitations. What's beyond this opening, Sir Guide?
No one knows. None of us has ever gone inside. For us, this is a holy place. We were promised our deliverance would begin in there. And even those of us who have no love for Shub still respect the castle that triumphed over both Shub and the Recreated. You go in. I'll stay here on guard.
No, You have as much right to know what's in there as we do. Besides, there's no telling what might have got in there, or survived in there down the years. We can use you, Sir Guide.
The spider creature nodded his misshapen human head, overcome and unable to speak. Brett looked dubiously at the great dark crack in the earth.
Still, someone should stay out here on guard, just in case.
You mean you're willing to stay out here on your own, ready to fight off whatever might come along?
I didn't necessarily mean me.
Lewis produced a small flashlight and shone its narrow beam into the darkness. He could just make out a drop of some 10 feet to what seemed to be a flat surface tilted at a 1-in-3 angle. He supposed they could make a crude rope out of the surrounding vegetation, but frankly, he just couldn't wait any longer. He sat down on the edge of the hole, dangled his legs over the darkness, and then pushed himself off. He was quickly back on his feet, bracing himself against the steep incline, flashing the light of his torch around him. It was all very quiet and cold as the grave, and the gloom swallowed up the torchlight after only a dozen feet or so. He couldn't even tell how large a space he'd entered. He supposed he could call out and listen for an echo, but he had a strong feeling that drawing attention to himself could be a really bad idea.
Well, can we come down too, Lewis? Is it safe?
Seems to be. Come on down. I don't see any sign of a welcoming committee.
Understandable. They didn't know I was coming.
Jessamine dropped lightly through the opening, easily keeping her footing on the sloping floor. Rose had to lower Brett through, and then quickly came in after him, sword and gun in hand. Saturday and Guide had to widen the gap some, but finally they squeezed through and joined the others. Lewis flashed his torch beam around, trying to pick a direction, but there was just the darkness and the cold stone, and no sound at all apart from what they brought with them. The air was dry and dusty, tickling the back of his throat. He felt like a tomb robber. And then there was a sudden lurch, as though the whole castle shuddered, stirring in its sleep. The floor pressed up against their feet, and then settled itself. And suddenly, they were all standing at the same angle as the floor. One at a time, the lights came on, gleaming silver half-spheres set into the ceiling. A great stone corridor appeared around them, stretching away in both directions. And somewhere, far away and deep below, they could feel a massive power plant starting up, energizing the castle after many long years of hibernation.
It's alive. The whole place is waking up. It knows we're here.
Lights and artificial gravity. Not bad after a major crash landing 200 years ago. I am officially impressed, darlings.
Lewis turned off his flashlight and put it away.
This is the original Deathstalker standing. It was already 1,000 years old when Owen first found it here on Chandrakor and woke it to life once more. They built to last in the old days. And now here we are, looking for help against injustice, just like Owen. It's like we've wandered out of history and into legend, into a place where dreams come true and miracles can happen.
We don't belong here. This is a place for heroes and warriors, the kind of people who belong in legends, not like us. This is all just too big, too important.
Why are you whispering?
Don't you have any respect? No, of course not. Silly question.
Come on, Brett. I never knew you to be lacking in ambition before. Think of the treasure.
Oh, yes, that does help.
In the end, Lewis chose a direction at random and led the way down the wide, long corridor. Jagged cracks sprawled across the corridor walls, and here and there large clumps of stone had fallen away to litter the floor. Sometimes the floor rose and buckled, and sometimes the overhead lights didn't work. There were hanging tapestries and faded portraits of people dead for centuries, and mounted displays of ancient weapons. There were outcroppings of high tech, much of it smashed or blown apart or melted down. But there was no dust, no cobwebs, no signs of invading vegetation or wildlife. The corridor could have been deserted yesterday.
This was an impact damage. This is the result of the castle's last battle against the recreated. and the roguey eyes of Shub. Must have been a hell of a fight.
It's hard to remember that Shub were once the official enemies of humanity.
Not for us. Here, we suffer the results of their torments every day.
The corridor finally branched, and then branched again, and they wandered through many passages, stairways, and intersections, gradually losing track of time. The castle was huge, with many floors, but somehow, Lewis always found the way that led deeper into the castle, heading towards the great hall at its heart. Part of his certainty came from recognizing landmarks, from stories he'd been told since he was a child, and some of it came from suggestions murmured in his ear by the AI Ozymandias, whose original incarnation had been there before with Owen and apparently left retrievable relevant data. But a lot of it seemed like instinct, as though the old castle was part of Lewis's blood, his inheritance, as though he belonged here and always had.
Oh my!
Guide was becoming increasingly spooked, swiveling his bulging head back and forth.
Oh, it's definitely getting colder in here.
The cold of the grave.
Yeah, thanks, Rose.
Castles are difficult to heat, everyone knows that. But if I see the butler, I'll pass on your complaints.
A dark figure came stalking suddenly down the corridor toward Brett. Rose stepped quickly forward to put herself in front of him, covering the newcomer with her disruptor. Lewis just had time to take in the figure's old-fashioned clothing, and then it was gone. Disappeared between one moment and the next. Lewis opened his mouth to say something, and then stopped as more people appeared, men and women in various battle armors, crowds of them flickering on and off as they hurried silently up and down the corridor. Some of them walked right through Lewis and the others. And they didn't feel a thing, not even a cool breeze.
Holo images. Computer records from the past, probably security camera footage. Our presence must have activated them. Or maybe they're just random images given off as the computers come back online again.
A single hollow figure appeared, wrapped in a battered old cloak, limping slowly toward them, out of the past. They all knew his face. The cloak swung aside for a moment, and they saw he had one hand clapped over a bloody wound in his side. His face was taut and strained, but quietly determined.
Jack Random! Great-grandfather! What happened to you? I didn't think anyone could hurt you!
Jack Random seemed to look at Brett for a moment, and then he was gone, with nothing to show he'd ever been there.
Ghosts!
Hollow images, that's all, Brett.
No! No! It's the past coming back to life, haunting the present! The dead are still alive here!
Right, that's it. I'm out of here. No treasure is worth this. I'll go back and guard the entrance.
There's no reason to be scared of the dead.
What if they don't know they're dead?
I'll protect you, Brett. You'll be safe with me. Even the dead have enough sense to be scared of Rose Constantine.
Brett looked at her for a moment.
Oh, Jesus, Rose. We're gonna have to work on this whole comfort concept.
Brett glared at Lewis.
Right, I'll stay. But I'm not happy.
I'll try to live with the disappointment.
You shouldn't let this place get to you.
Saturday had hardly said a word since she entered the standing, except to snort and swear quietly every time she bumped her head against the ceiling. She'd had to walk hunched over all the way, and it hadn't improved her disposition one bit.
This place is big, yes, but size isn't everything. My kind had castles once. We had cities and technology and all the other things that make you weak. We outgrew them and left them behind. They got in the way of enjoying the world, of savoring its bloody pleasures, and letting it test us to our limits. There's nothing here for me, Lewis. I think I'll go back to the entrance and stand guard, just in case.
All right. Are you sure you can find your way back to the opening?
Of course. Reptiloids don't get lost. We always know where we are.
Pity.
Ow! Rose, that hurt!
Saturday. Well, we're busy in here. No one else gets in. No exceptions. Got it?
Got it.
Saturday turned and headed back the way they'd come, the flat top of her head brushing against the high ceiling. Guide waited till she was out of sight, and then flexed his multi-jointed legs briefly.
I hate to admit it, but I'm glad she's gone. She's just a little too weird, even for Chandrakor.
They pressed on, still heading inwards. Lewis could almost feel the massive weight of the castle, all its many floors and walls of solid stone, all its weight of history and legend and responsibility pressing down on him, as though he'd never really understood what it was to be a Death Stalker until now. He'd grown up in his own clan standing on Viramond, a tall and proud castle hundreds of years old, but it had been nothing compared to this. Men and women who had made themselves into legends had walked and lived and fought and died in this place, this standing. And others had fought and died here too, in the defense of humanity. Their names and reputations lost to Robert and Constance's need to remake history into legend. Owen would never have approved. He'd always been proud of his modest skills as an historian. History was soaked into the walls of this standing, impressed by the weight of centuries, though no one knew exactly how many. The Empire was old, far older than most people were comfortable remembering. Little now remained of the legendary First Empire, declined and fallen long before even this ancient castle's time. But according to family legend, some things from that distant time were still to be found here, preserved in stasis fields, like insects trapped in amber. Which made Lewis wonder what else might be preserved or trapped here, unwillingly awakened by his intrusion. Brett paused to admire a sword displayed on a simple wall plaque. He didn't know why it caught his eye particularly. There was nothing on the plaque about its history, just the name, Morgana. It looked like a good sword, and Brett needed a new weapon after losing his last one during his panic attack in the jungle. So he took the sword off the wall and slipped it into the scabbard at his waist. It was a comfortable weight, like it belonged there. He looked quickly at Lewis, bracing himself for a stern lecture on the evils of looting, but the Death Stalker was clearly preoccupied with his own thoughts. Brett decided not to disturb him. And finally, they came to the Great Hall, the heart and center of the very first Death Stalker standing. It was vast, a long hall with massive stone walls, the raftered ceiling mostly lost in shadows high above them. It was also completely empty. No furnishings, no trace of occupants, not even any carpeting on the stone floor or decorations on the stone walls. There was nothing and no one there to greet them after their long journey into the interior of the castle.
Hello? Anybody? Hello?
They stood around for a while, wondering what they should do next, all of them feeling a definite sense of anticlimax and even betrayal.
Let's just sit down and wait and get some rest. Let the castle computers wake all the way up and notice they have visitors.
Well, at least we're not being shot at or bum-rushed like every other damn place we've been thus far.
Brett went over and sat in a corner so he could have his back to two walls and watch all the entrances. Rose sat down next to him, cross-legged, balanced her sword across her leather-clad thighs, and began cleaning and polishing the blade with a piece of rag. Guide went off into a different corner to be by himself. Perhaps because he didn't feel worthy to be a part of the great Death Stalker's party, perhaps because he knew the other still found his appearance disturbing, or perhaps because he didn't entirely trust what his insect instincts might push him to when there was nothing else going on to distract him. Lewis sat down before the great empty fireplace, its interior blackened with many layers of ancient soot. Jessamine sat down beside him and leaned against his shoulder.
Tired? Feeling sorry you came?
Absolutely bone-dead weary, darling. But no, not sorry at all, really. I'm changing, Lewis. I can feel it. The more I have to fight and protect myself, the better I get at it, and the better I feel. I haven't felt this self-sufficient in ages. Reminds me of the old days, when I was just starting out, and the only way to get your money out of the club manager at the end of the evening was to put a gun to his head and threaten to listen to see if it was loaded. I hadn't realized how soft, how limited I'd become. And how bored. I mean, at least part of why I agreed to become Douglas's queen was that I had nowhere else to go in my profession except down. The trouble with achieving all your ambitions is, what do you do for an encore? To tell the truth and shame the devil, sweetie, I'd been coasting for years, taking on roles and shows I knew worthy of me just to keep my face in front of the public. But now, I'd forgotten how good it feels to be faced by challenges and overcome them. So I'm glad we did this together, love. I feel so alive with you. More alive than I've felt in years.
Does that mean you won't be moaning and complaining anymore?
Darling, I have an image to maintain, even here.
Louis put an arm around Jessamine, and they snuggled up together. But Louis had his own private thoughts. He approved of the new Jessamine. It was good to see her grow and blossom. But deep inside, where he thought the dark thoughts he didn't care to consider in the bright light of day, he worried that there might come a day when Jessamine would be so strong, so self-sufficient, that she wouldn't need him anymore. And that if she didn't need him, then she might not want him anymore either. And then, the only way to keep her would be to break her spirit, make her dependent on him again. He knew that for a selfish thought immediately and pushed it aside. He wanted what was best for her. He did. He'd always known that sometimes loving someone meant having the strength to let them go when they outgrew you. He hoped that wouldn't happen. But here in the ancient standing, he couldn't help but remember the oldest saying of his clan. Death stuck her luck. Always bad. Jessamine stirred inside his arm and raised her face to look at him.
We've come a long way in a short time, haven't we? Am I ever going to get my old life back, Louis? All the comforts and the adulation? Be a star again?
Louis, who had never cared about any of those things, took his time replying.
Do you really miss them so much? Do you regret throwing in your lot with me?
Only sometimes, darling. And then I look at you, and I remember you're worth far more than anything I gave up.
Brett sat morosely in his corner, hugging his knees to his chest, watching each of the hall entrances in turn, half convinced that something nasty was going to come charging in at any moment. He didn't like the castle. It reminded him of old stories from his childhood about wicked noble ladies of old who lured innocent peasant children into their lairs to make pies out of them. He saw Louis and Jessamine embracing and would have liked to have called out something cynical and gratuitously offensive, but he couldn't work up the energy. He was too busy being shit-scared. In the past, he'd always known what to do when he felt threatened by a job or a relationship. He ran. Show the problem his back, and then leave it behind in the dust. Well, he'd run from Finn Durandal, and much good that had done him. Now there was nowhere left to run, and he didn't know what to do. Rose stirred beside him, and it was a sign of how seriously spooked Brett was that he actually found some comfort in her company.
Why does this place get to you so much? It's just an old building. There's no one here but us.
It's the ghosts. This place is full of memories of people who mattered. Jack Random and Ruby Journey, for Uber Esper Jenny Psycho, for Blessed Owen and Hazel Dark. What they did here still echoes on, haunting the halls and corridors. They were real heroes, Rose. Not like us. We're only pretending. I'm a Random's bastard, supposedly descended from Jack and Ruby. And somehow I don't think they'd approve of me at all. I agreed to join up with the Deathstalker because I wanted to be the kind of man my ancestors could have approved of. But after all we've been through, I'm still just me. I should have known better. I'm not up to this. I'm not strong enough. I've never been strong enough.
Rose considered the matter for a while, still carefully polishing her sword.
We all want to be more than we are, Brett. Even me. Ever since our minds were linked by the Esper drug, I've been disaffected with my old life. It's not enough to be just a killer, just a monster. I need to be bigger than that. It's hard trying to learn how to be human, especially when all I have to learn from is you, Brett Random.
Brett looked sharply at Rose and was surprised to see her dark rosebud mouth move in something very like a smile.
Was that a joke, Rose?
Perhaps. Even monsters have feelings sometimes.
Brett smiled in spite of himself, shaking his head.
This is all just too weird. Everything's changing. There's nothing I can depend on anymore, not even me. I'm confused. Take today when we were fighting the monsters in the jungle. One moment I'm right there beside you, fighting like a warrior born, and the next I come to my senses and I'm running like a rabbit.
What was I thinking of? I'm not a fighter, never have been. Maybe I'm having some kind of a breakdown.
No, you're not. It's not you, Brett, it's me. Our mental link works both ways. And just as you have been teaching me about emotions and humor and sex that doesn't involve killing people, so I have been teaching you swordsmanship and tactics and the joys of slaughter. Our minds are linked on every level there is. We can't help but learn from each other. All the time we're growing closer together, becoming more like each other. So neither of us will ever have to be alone again.
Brett stared at her in horror, his eyes wide, his mouth working silently. He started to scramble to his feet, to run as he always ran. But Rose put a firm, implacable hand on his arm and held him where he was. He was too terrified to even think of struggling, even as his skin crawled at her touch. She smiled at him again, and he almost cried out.
Stop that, Brett. There's no reason for you to be scared. I won't let anyone hurt you, not even me. I will kill anyone or anything that tries to hurt you. I will stand between you and all harm. And I will not force you to become anything you don't want to be. I'm just trying to help you. You're the first person that ever mattered to me, apart from myself. I feel something towards you. I'm not sure what yet. But I promise I'll keep you alive until I figure out what it is. That's a joke, Brett.
Well, very nearly.
Brett actually did calm down a little as he realized Rose was, in her very own, very disturbing way, trying to reach out to him. Rose sensed he was no longer going to run and took her hand off his arm. She went back to giving all her attention to her sword blade, as calm as though nothing important had just happened. And perhaps for her, nothing had. Brett was still trying to come to terms with the idea that he wasn't safe, even inside his own head anymore. Her thoughts were influencing him all the time, whether consciously or subconsciously, trying to make him more like her. As if one wild rose wasn't more than enough. At least now he understood where all that ridiculous bravery and daring do had come from in the jungle earlier. He'd known that wasn't like him. He should have known it was too good to be true. He glared about him sullenly.
Look at the size of this hole. How big it is and how small it makes us feel in comparison. Everywhere we've been since leaving Logris has been a journey through the ruins of an age of heroes. A greater age than ours. You only have to look at the places they lived in to see that. People like us don't belong in a place like this. How can we hope to do what Owen and his people did? They were larger than us, even before they went through the madness maze. They were heroes.
They were people, just like us.
Lewis got up, helped Jasmine to her feet, and then they went over to join Brett and Rose. Though he never would have admitted it, the great scale of the Hall of his ancestors was making Lewis jumpy too, and he was glad of an excuse to join the others. He sat down and leaned back against the wall next to Brett.
I told you, I've seen Owen and Hazeldark, the real people. Sherbet records of them in action, and the Dust Plains of Memory that used to be the Imperial Matrix. Owen and Hazel are legends, no, But back then, they were just people. A man and a woman struggling to do the right thing. I'm sure they had doubts and indecisions, just like us. They were ordinary people, and they did extraordinary things anyway, because they had to. And so we go on, against impossible odds, for the same reasons they did. Because we have no choice, and because there's no one else.
Don't put money on it. Show me a safe route out of here, and I'd be gone so fast it'd make your head spin.
I've played Owen and Hazel in half a dozen operas. Marvellous roles, of course, but I can't say I really knew either of them. You only have to look at a place like this to realise they lived in a whole different world from us. We've all got soft since then.
Maybe that's part of what we're fighting for. So that we can all be safe enough that it's all right for us to be soft.
Oh, very deep. This is all Owen's fault anyway. He should have stopped the terror before he left. It's his unfinished business that's going to kill us all.
Brett knew that was unfair even as he said it, and no one bothered to answer him. Lewis glared around the giant empty hall, as though he could force answers out of it through sheer strength of will.
You were here before, Oz, or at least your progenitor was. What do you think we should do now?
Oz spoke through their comm implants.
It wasn't exactly me. When you get right down to it, I'm just a shop subroutine created around bits and pieces left over from the original Ozymandias, with memories I have from that time are fragmentary at best. Still, this place is more familiar than most. I remember a room full of mirrors whose shimmering surfaces revealed possible futures. I remember automatons, repair robots in the shape of men, still striding elegantly through the standing after 1,000 years. And I remember finding the Shadow Men, Imperial assassins set after Giles Deathstalker. He killed them, and then put their stuffed and mounted bodies on display.
Okay, this is seriously creeping me out.
I never liked Giles. Never trusted him.
Giles Deathstalker, the first and founder of my clan. Our family archives don't have much on him. Just an old portrait, and stories of some of the great battles he fought. Owen found him preserved here. The last remnant of an earlier time. They fought side by side in the Great Rebellion. And then Giles went bad, and Owen had to kill him. Deathstalker luck.
Aren't there any happy endings in your family's history?
Always a first time for everything. Oz, anything else you can tell us?
For some time now, I've been trying to make contact with the Standing's computers. I can tell they're all back online now, awake and aware. The amount of power being generated in this castle is simply staggering. And it's still rising. All kinds of systems are waking up, and I don't recognize even half of them. Lewis, the castle's computers have to know you're here. I'm trying every contact protocol on my records, but they won't open up to me. They feel strange. Not like any form of computer mind I've ever encountered before. I think they're even older than the Standing itself. Lewis, I might have an idea. An almost memory from Owen's time. You talk to them. Declare yourself, your name, and your heritage. And show them the ring. Go on. They're listening. They're waiting.
Lewis rose slowly to his feet, and the others got up with him. He headed towards the center of the hall. The others wanted to go with him, but he waved them back. He stopped in the middle of the great and empty hall, and looked around him. He could almost feel another presence there with him, surrounding him.
I am Lewis Deathstalker. I am outlawed now, but still I am the first of my clan, as Owen was before me. And I have come here as he did, in search of help from my family. Because if I fall, the Empire falls with me. As proof, I bear Owen's ring. The Deathstalker ring, sign and symbol of clan authority.
He held up his hand to show off the chunky black gold ring, and the castle answered him. All the lights in the hall came on at once, fierce and powerful, blasting away the shadows of centuries. A great view screen appeared, floating above the cold fireplace. Images came and went swiftly, of faces familiar and unknown, but all of them Deathstalkers. A great beam of light, shimmering in silver, slammed down right next to Lewis, a spotlight so blinding and intense that they all had to look away. The intensity slowly faded, And when they looked again, they saw a single figure standing in the spotlight, held in place like a moth on a pin. He was tall and sparely built, with muscular arms. He had a solid, lined face with a silver-gray goatee beard, his long hair pulled back in a scalp lock. He wore a set of battered, shapeless furs, bunched at the waist by a wide leather belt. He wore thick golden armlets and heavy silver rings on his fingers. He bore a heavy sword on one hip and a gun of unfamiliar design on the other. He looked fierce and dangerous, cold and determined, and every inch a Deathstalker.
My God! It's Giles!
Ghosts! I told you!
Shut up, Brett.
Lewis studied his coldly smiling ancestor for a long moment, and then extended his hand with the ring and thrust it into the light. It felt freezingly cold, painfully cold, but he held the hand steady.
I am Lewis Deathstalker. I know who you are. I heard you the first time.
The spotlight snapped off, leaving them all blinking. Lewis snatched back his hand. The hollow figure of Giles, if that was all it was, looked at everyone in the group, including Guide, still shrinking away in his corner.
I'm not your ancestor, boy. I am all that remains of the computers who once ran this standing, speaking to you through the image of Giles Deathstalker. Thought it might make this easier for both of us. 200 years and more since anyone came calling to disturb my rest. Should have known only really bad news would bring anyone back here. Why were you outlawed, Lewis?
For loving the wrong woman? And for speaking out against evil?
Yes, that sounds familiar. I suppose I should ask what's become of the family, but since I'm not really Giles, I don't think I really care. You bear the ring. That's all that matters.
Hey, hold on. Anyone could just walk in here with that ring on and claim they were a Deathstalker.
Giles glared at him, and Brett immediately went back to hiding behind Rose.
No, they couldn't. The ring is coded to the Deathstalker line, and it has all kinds of nasty tricks built into it to take care of imposters.
Lewis deliberately didn't look down at the ring on his finger, but an icy chill caressed the back of his neck for a moment. If his family line had been just a little further distanced from the main line... He made himself smile easily at Giles, even though he found talking to the original Deathstalker more than a little disturbing, given the bad end Giles eventually came to. He wondered if the computers knew.
We come here in need, not just ours, but all humanity's. The Empire is endangered. The Terror has finally found us. We need to locate the missing Owen Deathstalker and Hazel Dark. Can you assist us?
The Terror. I know things about the Terror, though I don't know how I know them. And I know things about Owen and what he found at the hidden heart of the Madness Maze that no one else knows. A voice came and told me these things 200 years ago, after the defeat and restoration of the Recreated. It told me that humanity must evolve, achieve its full potential, because something awful was coming from far beyond our galaxy, the Terror. It is not life as we know it, but far more. It eats souls, and its young incubate in the hearts of sons. It brings madness and suffering, and the death of all that lives. The Terror is one and many, both and neither. An extra-dimensional creature beyond our understanding, and all of space and time is its prey. As flies to wanton boys are we to the Terror.
We're dead.
How do we stop it? We tried sending people through the Madness Maze centuries ago. It killed them all.
Maybe they weren't the right people. I know more about the maze. Do you want to hear it?
Do we have a choice?
Not really. At the heart of the Madness Maze lies a great secret, the Dark Void device.
That's it! The Dark Void device snuffed out hundreds of stars and their planetary systems in a moment. That's the weapon we need to stop the Terror.
It's not a weapon. It's a child. My child, transformed and empowered in the maze. As a baby, he created the Dark Void in a moment of panic. He knows better now. I never got to see him.
after I left him in the maze's embrace. But Owen saw him and spoke with him. I never got to see how my son grew up. Perhaps you will.
Owen. Tell us about Owen.
The voice spoke to him directly. It told him many things, secret things, far more than it told anyone else.
This voice, if it knows so much, perhaps we have a friend, or at least an ally from somewhere else. Maybe even equal in power to the Terror.
Perhaps. I have no way of knowing. It could be just the sole survivor of an earlier assault by the Terror. There are many players in this game, and only some of them have revealed their true nature.
Lewis remembered the little gray man who'd given him the Deathstalker ring at Douglas's coronation. He said he was Vaughn, an old friend of Owen's, but Lewis had seen Vaughn's grave on Lacrimi Christi. So what was he really? A ghost? Lewis scowled at Giles's Hollow, his ugly face taking on even uglier lines. Of late, Lewis's whole life had been haunted by the past, by ghosts who refused to lie quiet, and he was getting pretty damned sick of it.
Tell me about Owen. Tell me what happened to him.
Some say he's dead, some say he isn't. If you want answers you can trust, you'll have to go to Hayden, to the heart of the Madness Maze, and speak with the child. Only he knows for sure.
Even though the odds are the maze will madden and murder us,
Deathstalker luck. The maze is the key. Everything else turns around it, and always has. You must go in, cousin. It is your destiny.
It might be his, but it sure as hell isn't mine. I'm not going in, and you shouldn't either, Lewis. The odds suck, big time.
Don't worry, I'll hold your hand.
That thought doesn't help much, actually.
Brett folded his arms across his chest and looked determinedly in another direction, his lower lip protruding sulkily.
You know, an awful lot of people seem really determined that we should all enter the maze. A suspicious, or even only partly paranoid person might well suspect that we are being manipulated, guided, used by other people for their own purposes.
I just had a really spooky thought.
Brett was so taken with his new idea that he forgot that he was busy being upset and outraged.
What if it's the Madness Maze itself that's behind all this? Could the maze, or the child within, have been manipulating events all along from behind the scenes just to bring a Deathstalker back to it?
You're right, Brett. That is a really spooky thought. If you have any more thoughts like that, do feel free to keep them to yourself.
Look, if we really are going to Hayden, and I still hope and pray that an outbreak of rational thought and good sense will prevail so that we don't have to, if we really are going to that bloody hell world, it is 100% guaranteed certain to be quarantined and very heavily guarded. You can bet serious money that Finn will have reinforced the usual patrols with every nasty and vicious defense he's got. We are talking star cruisers, orbiting minefields, battle espers, and mine bombs. Which means, if we really are going, we're going to need powerful weapons of our own. So how about it, Giles? You got anything here we can use?
Go out of here, by the main doorway. Follow the signs down the corridor and down 9 levels, and you will come to a stash of First Empire high-tech and weaponry, held inviolate behind a stasis field for over 1,000 years. Even I don't know what's in there. The real Giles inherited it from his ancestors, long before he assumed the Deathstalker name. And either he never got the chance to use it, or he never found the nerve to try. First Empire tech can be very dangerous. We have all fallen a long way since those days.
First Empire weapons? Oh, people, we are talking serious, serious money here!
Shoot first, make money later. Let's take a look.
Say goodbye first. We won't be meeting again. This standing has come to the end of its days. The castle was badly damaged inside and out, even before Jenny Psycho nursed it here and crash-landed it in the jungle. Systems are failing, the power plant is fading, the very stone is crumbling. I activated the systems one last time and serviced a Clan Deathstalker. Now it is time for me to rest. Allow me to wish you all good luck. You're going to need it.
The silver spotlight snapped off, taking Giles with it. And without them, the great and empty hall seemed much darker.
Castles can be rebuilt. Systems can be repaired. Power plants can be replaced. Whatever happens on Hayden, I will come back for you. You are the history of my family.
Lewis waited, but there was no reply. Jessamine tugged urgently at his sleeve.
I really think we should get moving, darling. If the power plant is on its last legs, there's no telling how long we've got before everything starts shutting down again. I definitely don't want to be stumbling through these corridors in the dark. We might never find our way out.
Wonderful. Something else to worry about. I know. Shut up, Brett.
I'd hoped I'd have more time to walk the passageways and galleries of the original standing of my clan, to feel like a real Deathstalker. But there's never enough time for all the things we need to do. Let's go.
As they left through the main doorway, a glowing arrow appeared, floating in midair. It drifted away before them, and they followed it through many intersections and down 9 levels. Lewis kept careful note of all the twists and turns, just in case. Rose was walking point beside him again, gun in hand, while Jessamine and Brett followed behind. Guide brought up the rear. He hadn't spoken a word since they entered the Great Hall. He had been made an observer in his own world, a bit player in someone else's story, and he didn't know whether to feel bitter or overawed. Great forces were at play here, and perhaps the best he could hope for was to be overlooked when gods went to war. They came at last to a solid steel door with no obvious handle or lock mechanism. The floating arrow disappeared. Brett was all over the door in a flash, checking it minutely from top to bottom, but eventually had to admit that there was nothing there for him to work with. He kicked the door in frustration,
"Son of a... Oh!
Oh!" and then hobbled away to lean on Rose. Lewis looked at the door for a long moment.
Lewis Deathstalker.
The door swung open before him, revealing the familiar blurred shimmer of a stasis field. And then that snapped off like a bursting soap bubble. And inside...
What the hell is this shit?
Tech of some kind.
Oh, but I don't recognize any of it. There's nothing here that looks like anything I'm familiar with, and I've been around. I thought there were supposed to be weapons here. Big, nasty weapons.
Some of it could be weapons. Let's try turning a few things on and see what happens.
Let's not. There's no telling what some of this stuff might do, and I really don't think we should turn anything on until we're sure we can turn it off again.
They all looked at the enigmatic shapes and forms laid out before them. Obscure structures of glass and steel and crystal, and other materials that couldn't easily be identified. Lights came and went, strange energies pulsed, and here and there pieces moved in unsettling ways, rotating through strange angles, and none of it made any sense at all. Just looking at some of it made their heads ache, as though they were looking at things too complicated or too subtle to be understood without some really sophisticated equipment as a mediator.
This is why Giles never used any of it. Even 1,000 years ago, this would have been beyond him. We forget just how advanced the First Empire was, and how far we've fallen since then. Maybe our empire is doomed to fall too. Only this time, there won't be anyone left to start the long climb back up again.
Ooh, I just had a spooky thought.
Oh, don't you start.
No, listen. Could the Terror be something left over from the First Empire? Some awful doomsday weapon they unleashed and then couldn't shut down? Maybe that's why the First Empire fell.
I don't think so. If I'm understanding what the voice said correctly, the Terror is older than that, from outside our galaxy.
And then the whole castle shook around them.
Oh!
They all clung together as the floor bucked and heaved under their feet. New cracks appeared in the stone walls, and dust fell from the ceiling. The stasis field reestablished itself, and the steel door slammed shut.
The standing is under attack. Force shields have been activated. Weapon systems are offline. Star drive is offline. Available power cannot support full shield for more than 2 hours, 12 minutes. Sensors detect unusual energies operating.
Show me what's happening.
A view screen appeared on the air before them, showing a series of views of what was occurring outside the standing. A wide area of jungle, including the castle's clearing, was being blown apart by a battle barge hovering overhead. Energy blasts toppled trees and incinerated the vegetation. Fires were burning everywhere, filling the sky with thick black smoke. Misshapen creatures were running everywhere, panicked by the fire and the noise, and a threat most of them could barely comprehend. Disruptor fire picked many of them off as they ran. More attack ships were dropping out of the sky, adding their firepower to the assault. The main attack was centering in on the clearing, the grassy earth being systematically blown away to reveal the castle beneath. And right there in the heart of the mayhem, whooping and howling as they darted in and out of the energy beams, were 13 gravity sleds bearing men and women in familiar armor and purple cloaks.
Paragons! I don't believe it!
Unusual energies are attacking the force shields. Systems are collapsing, malfunctioning. I am being targeted. My mind is under attack.
Can you still maintain the shields?
Not for much longer. Get out where you can. I will protect you for as long as I can. I am built to serve Clan Deathstalker, even to the death.
Come on!
Lewis led the way back through the stone corridors, running now, as the castle creaked and groaned and shuddered around them. Already the lights were going out, and sometimes the artificial gravity flickered on and off, sending the party staggering this way and that. Guy caught them when they would have fallen, his 8 legs skittering easily over the bucking stone floor. Cracks in the walls lengthened and widened, and sometimes the walls bulged slowly, the ancient stone buckling under the strain. The roar of the power plant under their feet became ragged and uncertain.
Are the force shields still holding?
If they weren't, we'd all be dead by now. The castle's been inert for too long. It wasn't ready for an attack like this.
When Lewis and his companions finally made it back to the hole in the outer wall they'd entered through, they found Saturday sheltering there, his foreclaws flexing helplessly as he glared at the attackers outside. Lewis pushed past the reptiloid to see for himself. The air was thick with smoke and the stench of burnt vegetation. Ships filled the sky for as far as he could see, energy beams stabbing down like malevolent lightning. The 13 Paragons shot back and forth on their gravity sleds.
I don't believe this. I know some of those people. Good men and women. Oh, I fought beside some of them. How could Finn have turned people like this to his cause?
I've got to say, I'm surprised to see Paragons at all. The files I found in Finn's computer said he planned to have them all ambushed and taken care of because he didn't believe they'd ever come over to his side. What could have happened while we've been away?
Never mind that! How did they find us? How did they know where to find the castle? Hell, we didn't even know where we were going until we got here!
Jessamine glared at Guide.
Could some of your people have betrayed us?
No! Never! Any of us would rather die than betray our promised savior!
Screw that! Once a monster, always a monster! Somebody talk! Somebody sold us out!
No! You are wrong! I provide a distraction. Make good use of it, Deathstalker!
And before any of them could even think to stop him, he squeezed his long legs through the opening and charged out into the clearing. He darted and dodged among the energy blasts with inhuman speed, defying them to touch him. And then a gravity sled came sweeping in low to target him. Guide ran before it and then spun around at the last moment and sprayed thick swatches of webbing from a pulsing orifice in his chest. The sticky threads enveloped the Paragon and his sled, and he quickly lost control of his craft. He was still struggling to keep the sled from nosediving into the ground when Guide leapt lightly up onto the sled, his 8 legs snapping shut around the sled like a trap. The Paragon just had time to look up, and then Guide's mandibles buried themselves in his skull and ripped the top of the Paragon's head off. 3 more gravity sleds came sweeping in. They targeted the damaged sled. Lewis and his people hadn't even had time to get out of the opening.
Damn it!
Lewis hammered one fist helplessly against the broken stone.
Who are those bastards?
It is the Shadow Men. They've come again. The Empire's bully boys.
Oh, great. The castle's losing it. Does anybody have any ideas?
I don't see Finn out there, and I don't see Emma Steele or Stuart Lennox, which suggests that Finn wasn't sure enough of victory here to show up in person, and that he hasn't turned all the Paragons to his cause yet. There is still hope,
That's kind of long-term hope. I was hoping for something a little more immediate.
Our options would seem to be somewhat limited. Either we stay here inside the castle until the shields collapse and we all die, or we go out there and fight them face to face and we all die.
Tell me there's a third alternative. Even a really bad one would do.
Well, I thought I'd go out there and negotiate.
What? What makes you think they're interested in anything you've got to say?
Because we've been inside the Standing, and they don't know what we might have learned and found there. Finn would want to know those things.
But we didn't find or learn anything useful, really.
Yes, but they don't know that. You stay put. I'm going out.
Fine. You do that. And all of us sane people will stay here and watch you do it from a safe distance.
We're all going out.
Rose nodded approvingly.
Some days I think I'm the only rational person in this group.
One by one, they hauled themselves up and out through the great crack in the wall and went out into the clearing with their weapons holstered and their hands in the air. The attack cut off. Fire still raged in and around the clearing. 12 paragons on gravity sleds came sweeping forward to look down on the assembled outlaws. All the paragons smiled the same unpleasant smile.
I know you. It's Sebastian O, isn't it? We fought alongside each other during the Quantum Inferno. How can you side with Finn? Can't you see what he is?
I'm so sorry, Lewis. But I'm afraid Sebastian O isn't at home right now. You might say he's been evicted. I'm the new tenant.
Jesus! It's an elf! He's been possessed by an elf!
Not just an elf, an Uber Esper, the Grey Tray. At your service, Sir Deathstalker. I live in all these bodies for now. They make such marvelous weapons.
That's what Finn meant about ambushing the Paragons. He's working with the elves.
Not now, Brett.
All the Paragons are our thralls now. They belong to the Uber Espers, and we do such marvelous things in their name. And now it's your turn, dear Lewis. You and all your little group. Welcome to hell, Deathstalker, and to all the wonderful, terrible things I'm going to make you do.
The Grey Train reached out to invade their minds, only to recoil as the Standing's S-Blocker tech kicked in, protecting Lewis and his people. And while they were distracted, Lewis grabbed a grenade from his belt and threw it into their midst.
Everyone get down! No!
Lewis was on his feet again in a moment.
Fire!
Lewis, I'm on my way. The Herald will be with you at any minute. Hang on.
No! They'll blow you apart on sight!
Never happen. This ship's got really ace shields and stealth capabilities, remember? They'll never see me until it's too late. Now hang on in there, and don't worry. Reinforcements are on the way.
Lewis realized all the Paragons were dead now. Though Rose was still chopping at a few of the bodies with her sword just to make sure. The attack ships were hovering overhead, confused by the sudden turn of events, but they'd soon start firing again, and Lewis and his people were caught out in the open. And then Lewis gaped in disbelief as an army of monsters came crashing through the burning jungle and into the clearing, surrounding the Deathstalker and his people. They threw themselves into the air and attacked the lower ships, smashing through the steel hulls with their unnatural strength. The Grey Train tried to possess the monsters' minds and couldn't. They were just too different, too altered. The Herward arrived, slipping easily through the attack ships with amazing speed and dexterity. Some of the battle barges high above opened fire at last, but the lower ships were in the way. Lewis and his companions crowded aboard the Herward, and Oz immediately engaged full power and shot up through the smoky sky, heading for orbit. The attack ships turned ponderously slowly to follow, and the computers in the Deathstalker Standing overloaded its power plant and blew it apart. One last service for Clan Deathstalker.
Deathstalker Return, Changing Tides is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2004, Simon R. Green. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Vanessa Benjamin, Sonny Lasky, Corey James, Terrence Aselford, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savard, Dylan Lynch, Colleen Delaney, M.B. Van Dorn, Karen Carbone, James Konacek, Michael Replogle, Chris Rowan, Thomas Penny, Christopher Graybill, and Mort Shelby. Directed and adapted for Graphic Audio by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Chris Rowan. Graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan and Dan Smith. The Deathstalker Return theme was composed by Dan Smith. Additional original music by Chris Rowan and Dan Smith. If you enjoy Deathstalker Return, be sure to look for the graphic audio version of DC Comics' Infinite Crisis, available at Roadstops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Blood Bond 2, Brotherhood of the Gun.
The bartender didn't even blink when Matt and Sam ordered whiskey with a beer chaser. But he, along with everyone else in the dark barroom, did notice the tied-down twin guns of the strangers. Two Wolves and Bodine took their drinks to the far end of the bar, where their backs would be facing a wall, and they could get a good look at everybody in the place. It wasn't a pleasant view.
Did you ever see so many ugly people gathered in one place in all your life?
Yeah, for a fact. If a beauty contest was held in this place, nobody would win.
What the hell is your problem?
Who owns that horse with the 4V brand?
Matt knew full well that somebody had used a running iron to make the brand, probably out of a double W.
I do, if it's any of your damn business, which it ain't.
You owe us a coffee pot.
Huh? I don't owe you nothing, mister, but I just might decide to give you a skinned head if you don't shut your mouth.
The only thing you're gonna give me is a new coffee pot. Now buy it from the man, set it on the bar, shut your big mouth, and get your butt back in the chair you just vacated.
Rah!
The outlaw lumbered toward the bar, heading straight for Matt, his big hands balled into fists. Sam stepped aside, his hands by his side, so he could watch the crowd and grab iron if anybody tried to interfere. Matt opened the dance with a short, straight right fist to the man's mouth. The blow knocked the outlaw spinning. He crashed into a table and sent beer mugs and cards and poker chips flying. He bounced to his boots and charged Bodine.
I'll rip your fucking head off for that, you shit!
Bodine stuck out one boot and tripped the outlaw. He slammed into the bar, belly high, and knocked the wind out of himself and a plank out of the bar just as Bodine slugged him twice above the kidney with a left and right. The outlaw staggered and turned, his eyes filled with pain and confusion. Bodine hammered him twice in the face with a left and a right combination and then drove his fist into the man's belly. As the burly outlaw slowly sank to his knees, Bodine grabbed him behind the head and brought his knee up, all in one fast, practiced movement. Knee connected with nose, and nose got flattened. Bodine turned his back to the man and faced the bartender as the outlaw fell on the floor, blood pouring from his broken nose.
Fill up a beer mug, friend. I just worked up a thirst.
You just worked yourself up for killing is what you just done. That there's Ray Porter, the Idaho Gunslick, and this room is filled with his men. What do you think about that, hotshot?
Bodine drained half his beer, set the mug on the bar, and looked at the room full of gunslicks. He jerked a thumb toward Sam.
3 days ago, me and my buddy here was riding south, just north of the Los Gigantes Butte, when we decided to camp near a tank.
He pointed to the unconscious gun hand from Idaho territory.
This jerk and four other jerks started shooting at us. They gave it up after about an hour, but not before they shot up my coffee pot. Now, I'm fixing to get a couple of dollars out of this hombre's pocket and buy me a new coffee pot. And if anybody feels like they want to stop me, just come on. Now, does anybody want to start this dance?
A man pushed his chair back and stood up, his hand close to the butts of his guns.
That just plumb breaks my heart. But I tell you what you should have done, mister. You should have carried two coffee pots. But it don't matter no more, because you ain't going to be needing them after today.
He grabbed for his guns. And Bodine cleared leather, cocked, and shot him just as the man's hands gripped the butts and he began his lift. The slug took the man directly in the center of the chest, piercing the heart. He was dead as he hit the floor.
Jesus H. Christ. He's as fast as Smoke Jensen.
What's your name, buddy?
Matt Bodine. And this is my brother, Sam Two Wolves.
The one who had spoken first after the gunfight slowly stood up, his hands in plain sight, and walked to the door.
Yep, I'm gone. I'll be taking me a bath and a shave out back.
Another man stood up, walking carefully.
Tell that boy to fill another tub, Harry. I feel the need for a soak myself. I'll get my extra set of long johns from the saddlebags and join you in a minute.
A man shouldn't ought to plug another man's coffee pot. Hard enough rolling out on a cold morning with coffee waiting. Plum discouraging without it. You help yourself to some greenbacks from Porter, Matt. He owes you a coffee pot.
Thank you.
Matt knelt down and pulled a wad from Porter's pocket. He took $2 and handed them to the barkeep.
One coffee pot, please.
Yes, sir, Mr. Bodine. I'll be back in a jiffy. Will there be anything else, sir?
Coffee beans, flour, and bacon. We'll settle up when I leave.
Yes, sir.
And grind the coffee fine. We like it stout.
Yes, sir, Mr. Two Wolves.
Matt turned to face the crowd.
You tell Porter that we're riding to join up with the man and the girl that Porter wants to rob. Tell him if I see his ugly face again, I'll kill him on the spot, no questions asked.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.